All right, Connor Happer, Shane Schillerberg with you. We'll see if we can get Chance in here in a couple minutes as we're patching things together. On a Thursday with a 3 o'clock College World Series game today, in just under an hour, we'll turn it out to the Omaha Baseball Village with Josh Peterson and Jimmy Allen, as they'll have you for a little under 3 hours as they get you ready for the 3 o'clock start today between Arkansas and Ole Miss. One guy who I know loves baseball dearly, Jacob Padilla, joins us right now. Hello, Jacob. How are you?
Hey, let's go. 20 straight minutes of baseball talk. Let's
baseball! Go. Have you watched any of the College World Series?
I have not.
So you couldn't even enjoy the fact that we had no games that were decided by less than 4 runs until yesterday.
Hey, at least we finally got one. Seems to be a trend in postseason recently where the actual competitive games are few and far between.
No, you're actually right. Like, I wanted to analyze it. There can't be a consistent thread that connects like the NBA postseason and the college baseball postseason. At least my sports brain is having a very, very tough time finding it. But this is a thing now. Like, I guess we just have bad postseasons and we have to live with it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of luck involved, I'm sure. Like, we'll get some good games eventually, I guess. I mean, a few of those NBA games down the stretch, they were at least competitive for stretches, even if we didn't get a true buzzer beater, any of the kind of games we were hoping for in the finals. But, I mean, it was more competitive than some of the others. So, hopefully, as we kind of get closer to the final game, you'll build up and kind of put a nice little cap on the CWS.
Well, what have you made of all of the weirdness that is surrounding the number one pick tonight and who it may be? And I mean, I've just been looking at it from an odds perspective. So it's changed again. This morning I checked it and I think Mancaro was the favorite. And then I checked it again and it was gone. And then I checked it and it was Jabari Smith at -2100, and then it was 700 last time I checked it, and that was about 10 minutes ago. Now he's down to 550. So he's like coming back down. Nobody's sure what to make of this in the top three area. Maybe we think it's going to be Jabari Smith, and then we sort of just go from there. I guess, what have you read into all of this stuff over the last couple days here?
Yeah, I was actually awake and kind of like on Twitter working on something as this all started last night, the odds shifting where suddenly Bancaro came out of nowhere, just started rising and rising and rising. And like it was in a very short period of time where he went from third to suddenly he's the favorite to go number one. And I don't know if that was some kind of reaction to just the fact that Smith had been kind of the established favorite for so long, trying to swing things back the other way. I don't know if there was some report that somebody heard that affected the market that others kind of picked up on or what the deal is. But, I mean, this morning, Woj obviously put out kind of he's like, now it's despite all that weirdness, it's still Smith, Holmgren, and Bancaro. And maybe that's part of what kind of resulted in the odds kind of shifting back now. I'm not a – better. I don't really pay too much attention to it, so like I don't understand the fine details about how lines move and all that, but it's certainly just following the people that do. They were kind of flabbergasted by what was happening last night. Sounds like it's not really something that a lot of people have ever seen before.
Are there any out of that group? Let's just focus on the three and then we'll go to some other names here in a second. Out of that three, is there a superstar in there in the next, 5-10 years?
I mean, there could be. Like, all three of those prospects, I think there's a lot to like with all of them. Obviously, Holmgren is unlike anything we've seen before.
Yep.
So just by that very nature, like, he doesn't really have a precedent. So he could be really, really good because we've never seen somebody like him. So you put him into the league and what does he look like? Which is with the length and some of the ball skills and the competitiveness and all that. Bancaro is a guy that I think we'll see kind of how much translates in terms of how high of a level, how efficient can he be and what he does. because the base level of skill set with the size, the feel for the game, he's probably the best basketball player right now, just in terms of capable of doing the most things with the physical tools, just with his size. But there are questions about, all right, the athleticism, can he generate high efficient offense, or is it going to be more like a poor man's Carmelo Anthony, where it's a lot of face up jumps, pull up jumpers, and how good of a 3-point shooter is he really going to be, and those kind of questions. So, there's definitely a world where he comes in and just he's a man from day one, and physically imposes as well, and is skilled enough to score 20 a game very early in his career. And then Smith is just kind of, I think he's risen up there just because he has the one elite skill with obviously the size, and it's kind of what teams are looking for at that position. He's a true stretch four with the ability to both defend and really, really shoot the ball. It's not really he's got a chance to shoot the ball, kind of like with Holmgren. This is a guy that can really, really shoot the ball. He can shoot it from three. He can shoot the pull-up, the mid-range. He's obviously like 6'10", good length, and he can defend multiple positions, can kind of survive switching out on guards for times. He is competitive on the defensive end. So he's kind of a guy that like fits in, I think, the best into the league right now, and probably feels like the safest bet. But all three of these guys, I mean, there's a chance that they're all just really good NBA players, and none of them ever become kind of a superstar or even an all-star level player. Maybe they're just kind of fringe level guys, really good starters, things like that. So I think that's kind of where the pessimism overall on the class is. Like, you don't know if there are certain or like superstar traits that you feel really good about. But I think there are some good players at the top for sure.
Do you think Jaden Ivey just blowing by everybody at Purdue plays in the NBA?
I do. It's kind of that level of nuclear athleticism isn't something that even at the next level that a lot of people have.
He's got some comparisons to Ja.
Yeah. And obviously their games are a little different. I think it's just kind of because of what Ja has done, you've got that image in your head, and you see Ivy with some similar traits or whatever. They're not quite the same. And that's kind of, I think the nuclear athleticism, the transition play, that is absolutely going to translate. And it's just a question of how good can he be in the half court? How good is his actual feel for kind of executing within an offense? He's kind of more of a combo guard than a true point guard. And you kind of wonder the passing read, how great of a passer is he? How good is he at reading the game at high speed? Obviously, he doesn't really have much of a pull-up game at this point, so that's kind of a question anytime you're talking about a lead ball handler. You got to be able to impact the game from multiple levels. So that's kind of where I think the questions are for him, but just in terms of the pure athleticism, that I think that's absolutely going to play. We've seen just how guys like, even like a Zion Williamson, that's the kind of guy where you wondered coming out of high school, like there were some questions coming out of high school, like how is this going to translate to the college level? He's just bigger and more athletic than everybody else. Then he went to the college game and was bigger and more athletic than everybody else. Then he went to the NBA and was bigger and more athletic than everybody else. So it's just, when it's that level of like, oh, wow, what just happened? That will translate. It's just, I think, with him, a matter of, all right, how does he develop his feel for the game and kind of the consistency on the jumper and kind of those things that'll make him more of a complete player versus just kind of a transition athlete. That's kind of the key to unlocking what he could be long term.
Jacob, speaking of range and dissenting opinions on a person in the draft, how about Bryce McGowan's? I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time now, and nobody has been able to come to a sort of a consensus on what his last year has been like, if it's been a success for him, and that we'll get to that in a second, and then what he might end up being in the NBA or what he is in the short term at the next level. I guess, how do we pull apart the evaluations on Bryce right now?
Yeah, I just updated our kind of like roundup of mock drafts, and he is just all over the place.
Yeah.
There's some that still have him in the 20s, and there's some that have him down in the 40s. So a pretty wide range now. And to be honest, like, he's a guy I have not really heard much about him throughout this entire draft.
Me neither.
There's a lot of guys that you hear about that are rising, that are falling, all this. It's been pretty quiet for Bryce. He just kind of, it seems like he's been out there. So that could either mean that he hasn't really impressed and there's some other guys that are going to jump ahead of him. It could just mean he's kind of stuck around and he's got some teams that'll like him, but that aren't saying a lot about him, that are kind of interested in hopefully getting him at their pick. I obviously got to have kind of a pre-write ready for this, yeah, for when he gets drafted to get it going. I'm not quite sure how exactly I'm going to have to write like three like intro type of thing, kind of depending on where the range is, because he is an outside chance. Like, he's the highest drafted Husker since Eric Piatkowski.
Yeah.
Ty Lue at 23 is kind of the threshold that he's looking to beat. And I even recently saw a mock with him at 22. Or he could slide back down and into the same range as Delino Banton and Isaiah Roby that we saw in the mid-40s. So it's kind of hard to know what to expect for him. So just going to have to be ready to kind of react to whatever happens there. And hopefully for his sake and his family's sake, it's not a case where we're sitting there watching and it continues to slide and slide. Hopefully there is somebody out there that he really impressed, that really like him, because
yeah,
he does have the tools that are worth investing in if you believe in his ability to kind of polish things up.
So that's the thing. Okay, so I asked this yesterday, and I'll frame it the exact same way. So, I mean, obviously it's a good thing for Nebraska to be able to get a five-star recruit and all that sort of comes with that and get a player like him. But It's Nebraska. It's not a blue blood. Obviously, it's a Power Five school, and you play in the Big Ten. But he's not, when he gets to Nebraska, he's not surrounded by what you're going to be surrounded by when you go to any of the schools that a five star could go to. Right? Was Bryce McGowan's time at Nebraska for him a success?
Yeah, I'd be interested to like get his thoughts on that, and I think part of that answer will be what happens tonight and where he ends up going, where he ends up landing.
Cause that's what it's all about. Like, I mean, he was clear about that from the start. Like, this is about trying to be the best player I could be for the next level.
Yeah. And on the one hand, he came here and he got to showcase what he wanted to do. He got to have the ball in his hands all the time, got to basically take any shot he wanted. Got to be the number one option. Those are all things that he was looking for, like within Fred Hoiberg's system. So he got to do that as opposed to just kind of being a bit piece on maybe a more blue blood type of team. On the other hand, a lot of his inefficiency and probably some of the questions about him right now are a result of kind of the system he had to play in and the environment that he had to play in, where Nebraska did not have enough spacing and enough creation around him to really allow him to, I think, maximize his ability. He had to take some shots that just wasn't falling for him in the college game. I think he's a better shooter than he showed at Nebraska, and there's some indicators of that. You look at his catch and shoot numbers, particularly the open catch and shoot numbers. Those were pretty good. He was over 40% on unguarded catch and shoot. The problem was mostly the off the dribble and the fact that he had more contested catch and shoot jumpers than he did uncontested.
He was off the dribble shooting a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And part of that is like he had to, but also was like, you probably didn't have to do it quite to the level that you did. And he did. I think he was able to learn as he did, and he definitely got better in some areas. In terms of, there are some stretches where he made really good passing reads. There's some stretches where he got better at playing with physicality and getting to the line, obviously, or getting to the basket. Obviously, getting to the line was a strength. He consistently drew contact all season long. So he was able to kind of learn and fail and go out there and keep playing through all of his struggles. So, I mean, there's a chance that he goes to a Kentucky or something like that, and shots don't fall early on, and he falls out of the rotation.
Yeah,
and we've seen that with a lot of, they've got a lot of high four-star, low five-star guys that end up transferring out or stick around multiple years or whatever, just because like Cal keeps a short rotation and you got to produce right away if you want to stay in it. So I don't think it worked out. I know it didn't work out the way he wanted to, obviously, but only getting to play half the season with his brother and the win total and all that. That's not what he wanted when he chose Nebraska. It could have gone better. I wish, for my sake, having to watch it all, and for him and knowing the family a little bit, I wish that Nebraska had been a little bit better, that guys had shot a little bit better around him so that we could have maybe seen him in a bit more optimized role. But ultimately, this is kind of what he wanted. He wanted to be the guy, and I don't think he quite performed to the level that he wanted and that I thought was possible. But he also showed enough there that I think there's something to like, and you can definitely see how he gets better with a couple years of development at the next level.
It'll be a really interesting case study, because there have been some scathing reviews on his year at Nebraska, but at the same time, there's going to be somebody, some general manager or somebody in the front office, some scout who says, This is all the stuff that we sort of thought that he could be is still there. We just didn't get to see it really at Nebraska. So there could be some value here. It'll be and I think the league is split sort of on that idea based on what I've read leading up to the draft on him. Like, do we think that this is that the playmaking ability and the consistent shooting is in there somewhere and we just didn't see it, or and you have to account for the things around him too. It'll just be, my guess would be that there's going to be somebody who says, you know what, I think this is a good opportunity to take a chance on a guy.
Yeah, like this was Jeremy Wu from SI's introduction to Bryce McGowan and kind of his breakdown on his board. McGowan is a gifted scorer who was buried in a terrible team context at Nebraska, where he had offensive freedom, but there wasn't a whole lot of structure in place. And that's kind of what it is, and how you choose to read into that. Oh, is he a ball hog who is going to be a low efficiency scorer, or is he a guy that that had to do what he could with limited help around him? And you get him into a better situation, and maybe you do get more efficient play out of him. So it's going to be a situation where it really is in the eye of the beholder, and which of the things that you see do you as scouts and GMs really believe in your ability to develop and to kind of polish up and get the most out of.
Yeah. All right, Jacob, we'll let you go. Oh, by the way, okay, so where have you've been tweeting from gyms, basically every gym that you could find this summer, not unlike you would normally do. Where have you been? What have you been up to over the last few months here?
Today I'm over in Council Bluffs at the Iowa West Fieldhouse for the Border Battle, which is kind of a team camp where you got a bunch of Nebraska and Iowa teams in it, and they get to play each other. And it's always fun kind of see Iowa against Nebraska, and just a bunch of games. So yesterday I was in kind of the same place that it was when we talked last week, over at Abraham Lincoln for the finals of that league. WS ended up winning that tournament. And I think what I've seen of WS, I think they're a pretty clear, like, preseason number one favorite.
Yeah. I would have told you that in March too, but everything that's happened this summer would say, yeah, that's going to happen.
Yeah. And the more I see of Bam and everybody else, I think it's Bam. And then you got a bunch of other teams that are kind of competing for 2, 3, 4, 5, kind of in that range. So, yeah, it's just kind of bouncing around just all the various team camps, various summer leagues, just kind of everything that I hear about. The more I see, the more informed I am, and the better I can both cover it and kind of talk with coaches and try to help our kids get recruited. So
that's
why
what
I do here.
Yep, that's what we talk to you for, Jacob. Appreciate your time as always, man, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good.
Jacob Adilla of Hill Varsity joins the show. Yes, got to stay informed, got to talk to people, and got to do it all the time. How about this? And by the way, Chance, welcome. Hello. How are you?
I'm great.
Chance, you have been just sitting in this room basically constantly for the last 7 days, right?
Essentially, yeah. You know, doing this, a little bit of that.
I have enjoyed your live, like, diary, your thought diary on Twitter. Based off of things that are either said on the broadcast or what's going on off air behind the scenes. Great stuff. Keep it going.
Yeah, Damon threw a U2 reference in there that no one acknowledged, and I just thought that I should repeat it.
Thank you. It's necessary. It's needed.
Also, I like your bucket hat.
Thank you. This is me now. I'm just bucket hat man. I decided after day one of the College World Series that I was going to buy a bucket hat, and then I became bucket hat man. And now, we'll see. Maybe it's just a College World Series thing. Maybe it's the rest of the summer. I don't know. But doing it for, you know, wearing the bucket hat for shows outside is good, and wearing it while you're running around the field is a good thing as well. All right. So Chance is here for the last half hour or so of the show. How about this?
Sure am.
Arch Manning.
Arch.
Have you seen this?
No.
Arch Manning is committed to Texas.
Shocking. Actually, that kind of is.
We've been following, well, not, I shouldn't say we, because I certainly don't care. But ESPN has seemed to care a lot about Arch Manning and where, what his every move is, and he's where he's on a visit this weekend, and where he might end up. He's committed to Texas, where, you know, Quinn Ewers is there, and you know, that whole thing exists. But you're not going to say no to Arch Manning. He's committed to Texas, so he is not going to be horns down. He's going to be horns up. A big win for Steve Sarkisian.
I'm sure old Steve will handle it with the usual tact. He handles everything.
Oh, he had a caller, and then he's gone.
Yeah, he wanted to talk to someone. He said, Damon or a producer. I guess I'm technically a producer, but I'm not that important. So
he wanted to talk to you?
Well, I wanted to put him on hold because I'm not sure what he wanted, so I was going to find someone who might know what he wanted. Because as far as the totem pole goes, I was carved like, the very first, like, all right, we're good. Let's right. move on to the next level.
Right, right. Well, okay. Well, it obviously wasn't too important because he's gone now. We'll see what happens.
They put him on hold. He was just gone.
He's gone. All right. So we'll see if we can't get a hold of Sam McEwen of the World Herald coming up next. If not, we have a few more things left to discuss. Once again, plan for the show today. We will finish this section of it up at noon before we send it off to Josh and Jimmy out at the Omaha Baseball Village, and they will take you for quite some time headed up, leading up to the broadcast today, which will begin, I believe, at 2:40 p.m. And Chance will be in for the rest of the day, or are you switching off at some point?
So I'm finishing your abbreviated show.
Thank you.
Doing all of the OBV show, and then I'm doing the game with Kevin, John, and Gary.
Yes.
And then I'm doing that until our other producer, Dan, shows up.
Dan.
So I will be relieved of duties by Dan sometime.
You will be here until Dan is here.
Yes. Daniel, if you're out there, I've never called you Daniel before. Dan, if you're there, I'm waiting for you.
All right. So that's the story above the board and behind, of course, today as well. We'll come back. We'll see if we can get a hold of Sam McEwen of the Omaha World Herald next on 1620 The Zone.